Alright, so Apple just made it slightly more complicated when it comes to buying and selling used iPhones and other Apple devices. So what happened apparently as of the 24th is that the website where we would go to get information about iCloud activation status was taken down. And at the time, there was really no explanation, and I don't think that Apple has put forth an official announcement as to why this happened, but here's how it used to work. If you were going to buy a used iPhone, in the beginning, you didn't have to worry about it, but when the iCloud activation lock became a thing, basically the kill switch, and there's something similar built into Android devices, obviously, but I won't get into that today because this is mostly about Apple. So what would happen is you can log into your iCloud account through your phone or your laptop or your tablet or your iPod or whatever it is that you happen to be using. I don't think you can do it on the Apple Watch. Maybe you can. But in any case, this complicated things for people like myself, who were in the business of not only repairing, but also buying and selling used iPhones. So I know that one of the first responses that we typically get from people is, well, if you don't want to worry about buying a stolen phone, then just make sure that you go to an authorized seller, you know, go to the Apple Store, or go to Best Buy, or go to, you know, some other retailer that is an official reseller of Apple products. Well, the problem with that, of course, and that is okay for you if that's your decision, but when we have people that are in the business of buying and selling used phones and people who understand that, like anything else, electronics depreciate over time. So when you buy something brand new in a box, that's fine. If you're looking for something that's not pre-owned, that's entirely okay, but let's be realistic. A lot of us don't get through the two-year period where we're financing our phone through a carrier and then buy whatever the upgrade is. You know, some of us want to do it every year, and there are people who do this quite more often than that. So being able to freely buy and sell phones is not necessarily a bad thing. There is a concern, of course, about getting stolen merchandise. So the feeling seems to be that one of the reasons that Apple probably pulled down their status. Oh, and let me give you the page, by the way, kind of long way of getting to that. So iCloud.com/activation lock is no more as of today. And fortunately, there is a workaround. So long story short is if someone came into our store or if someone on eBay had a phone for sale, you could go to iCloud.com/activation lock. Input the IMEI serial number from the phone, and then you could find out if there was an iCloud installed on that phone, if it was active. And if it was, you know that that iCloud needs to be taken off the phone, or you need to go onto that account and remove the device. Otherwise, even if the phone is in good working condition when you get it, it may over time be locked to that account again. And this typically happens when the phone is restored, or in some cases, even when a software update occurs. So we would go to the activation lock site, confirm that the phone is not currently installed on someone's iCloud account, and then you could buy it, sell it, and not have to worry about this problem. And the thing that got very complicated for most consumers who weren't aware of how this system works is that an iCloud can be, or a phone can be on an iCloud account, but you may not necessarily see the iCloud on the phone itself. So you can take the iCloud off of the phone, but when you go to restore it, because it's still on the original owner's or the previous owner's account, it will actually put the iCloud lock back onto the phone. And at that point, it can be very difficult to track down the person that you bought the phone from, because even if it shows you their email, when it prompts you to log into their iCloud on the phone, it only shows you part of the email address. So in a lot of cases, we had obviously a potential for people to steal phones, which was, you know, the good thing about the iCloud activation lock is that if your phone is stolen and you've got the iCloud installed on it, you can do a number of things. One, you can prevent it from being restored. You can prevent it from being used. Depending on which service you've selected from your settings option, you can actually remotely erase the phone or make it basically erase itself when it has so many incorrect password attempts input. So there was a good side to this. It was to prevent theft, and the explanation that was put forth, at least as of yesterday, is that there were some websites who were basically using a hardware solution in order to remove the iCloud from the iPhone. So it not an easy thing to do. If you saw what went into this, you would wonder why people are trying so hard. And, you know, obviously there is a criminal element involved here, but really, if you want a phone, you shouldn't have to go through all the trouble of a hardware solution for removing the iCloud. You should be able to go to the person who owned the phone and say, hey, can you log out of this? Or if you bought one and they mistakenly forgot to remove the iCloud, there should obviously be a solution. But that, of course, is a very difficult situation to deal with, because we want to prevent the theft of electronic devices, especially phones. And at the same time, there are some very legitimate situations where people end up with a phone that has an iCloud installed and there's no way for them to get it off other than this ridiculous hardware solution, which basically involves removing the motherboard, several of the components that are attached to the motherboard, and replacing them with new ones that are written with a different IMEI. So it's a very complicated and, you know, somewhat expensive process. But again, why should you and then someone's taking the phone apart and putting it back together, which could lead to future problems, of course, if it's not done properly. So the positive side here was to make it more complicated for people to buy and sell stolen phones, which is totally understandable. But quite often what happens is someone ends up with a phone, they didn't know there was an iCloud, and they're stuck. They basically have a worthless phone that now is going to probably get sold who knows where to another third party who thinks that they have a solution to remove the iCloud. So in doing this, in creating this process, what happened is that the people who are reprogramming these phones so that they'll have a valid serial number were apparently using the iCloud Activation Lock website in order to verify that the IMEIs that they would be installing on these phones was valid. So rumor is here, okay, so I'm going by several different sources, but rumor is that Apple did not want to make it easy for people to basically pirate IMEIs and take Cloud Lock phones and make them usable again, which is understandable. For a number of reasons. One, obviously, we don't want people buying and selling stolen phones. And number two, Apple certainly isn't going to make it easier for anyone to buy and sell a used product that they produce. Let's be honest, Apple is in business to make money. So anytime there's a secondary market that they're not involved in, that is not going to make them money. That is not going to make their shareholders happy. So if there is something within their control that they can do, they are going to eliminate any of these options that facilitate, to a certain extent, the trading of their properties or their products that they're not involved in. And this is another thing where we get a lot of resentment, I want to say, from the repair community, because it doesn't seem that, it seems as if, under certain circumstances, Apple is really out to get the repair shops and to stop them from making money and to put us out of business so we can't fix their products. And I don't entirely disagree with that, but I think a lot of this comes from a place where the motivation is to profit. There's no, hey, we don't like the fact that you're servicing our products, we want to shut you down. There is definitely an attitude like that when it comes to counterfeited products, because it is a direct loss to Apple every time someone buys a fake iPhone or a fake product that is being presented as if it is one of theirs. So that is totally understandable. When it comes to repair shops, I don't think Apple has it out for cell phone repair stores. I think where they're coming from is they want to make as much money as they can, and they want to make sure that their customer comes back to them every time they have a question or they need a solution for something. So it's not, hey, we want to put you out of business. It's, hey, we want to keep our customers and we want to get our customers to come back. So I think at the same time, obviously the effect is that it does impact people who are involved in the secondary repair market. But at the same time, it's not a thing where there's really a, we don't like you guys. It's just, hey, we're doing our job and we want to do is, you know, we want our customers to come back to us as often as possible. So anyhow, I probably should have put this up front, but you know, for the time being, there's a workaround for finding the iCloud activation lock. And what that is basically is to use their warranty page. So I don't know how long this is going to be, in existence. They may end up pulling this or making it more complicated, but I did verify as of today. This is January 30th, 2017. If you want to find out what the activation status or whether or not there's a Find My iPhone basically installed on a phone that you're looking to purchase, if you go to getsupport.apple.com and then scroll down, choose your device, click repairs and physical damage, and then click on whatever damage it is, you know, something like broken screen, and send in for repair. When you enter your serial number, it will then tell you whether or not they are able to service your phone based on whether there is an iCloud activation or Find My iPhone is turned on the phone. So again, this is at least as of today. I went to the site, I put my IMEI, and by the way, it can be an MEID if you have an older phone from a CDMA carrier, but I put my IMEI into the field, clicked on the next button, and the message I got was, sorry, but we can't create a repair while Find My iPhone is active. You'll need to turn off Find My iPhone and retry the serial number, etc. So you can, at least as of today, go to getsupport.apple.com and go through the process as if you are going to send your phone in for a repair, and you should get a response saying, yes, you can continue, or sorry, we can't recreate the repair while Find My iPhone is active. And that is, if that is the case, that means that the phone that you have cannot be restored because it's still got an iCloud attached to it, and it's also got Find My iPhone turned on, which means, of course, if you come across a phone that was not legitimately sold, then when you turn that phone on, it is going to send back a message or the location of the device to the original owner or whoever's got the Find My iPhone turned on, and they will be able to track where the phone is. And this is obviously something that you should be doing if you have an iPhone and you want to make sure that you can track it down if it gets lost or stolen. And at the same time, be aware that when you do that, you are obviously enabling the location services. So if you remember a couple years back when they kind of exposed this thing, your phone will be tracked wherever it travels. If you're concerned about Apple knowing your whereabouts at all times of day, then obviously that's something to take into consideration. Now, I wanted to lead off with this because today I wanted to be addressing or just kind of briefly talking about the subject of price negotiation. And I know that seems a bit of a stretch, but it is very closely related for a number of reasons. The biggest one obviously being that we have people who will bring in phones that they want to sell and they have an iCloud installed on them. And of course, if they, you know, obviously that raises suspicion right off the bat. If you've got an iCloud and you don't have the credentials to remove that iCloud, how are you going to expect me to believe that you are the rightful owner of that phone? If you've got a receipt with your name, address, and you know other information and your ID with you, that's one thing. But at the same time, you could, and here's the solution, by the way, if you lose your iCloud credentials, so you've got an iPhone, you've installed Find My iPhone, you forgot what the password was, and now you are locked out of your iCloud and you cannot remove it from the phone, but you want to sell the phone. So what do you do? Well, there is actually a solution. It's not a very simple one, unfortunately, for a lot of people. It depends on where you're located, but the long story short is if you take it to an Apple store and you can present an ID that matches the name that is on the iCloud that is installed on that phone, supposedly they can reset this for you. Now, I'm saying this because I have not personally taken my phone in for that reason, but I have spoken to a very reliable source who was in that exact situation, brought me an iPad where he didn't know the login for the iCloud. I could not help him. So I sent him to Apple and I saw him the next day with the exact same device and he had unlocked it. So I am 100% confident that they were able to get back into the device. Now, of course, a lot of questions come up there. And the first is going to be, well, what if it is, a family member and that family member is no longer with us? Then what? Well, I don't really know the answer to that, but I'm pretty sure they are not going to be able to help you. And that's another topic on its own. You know, if someone passes away, sadly, and has a passcode on their device, I've had people contact me trying to get, you know, can you bypass this lock? And generally, no, the answer is no. And secondly, why would you? Because you're saying that it's not your phone and you want me to get past the passcode. Why would anyone who is legitimately doing business, you know, on the up and up, going to help you get past somebody's password? And they say, well, you know, we lost this person and we're very attached to them. And they have pictures on their phone. Well, you know, there's really no way of knowing that they wanted you to have access to whatever information they put on the phone. Obviously, they have a password on the phone for a reason. So all I can really say is good luck. I don't think you're going to get much assistance from anyone who is truly a professional in that situation. Now, when it comes to phones, one of the things that we get a lot of is questions about pricing. And this is a big one if you're in the phone business. If you're doing repairs, you're buying and selling phones, you're selling accessories and so forth. And this is whether you're doing it from a storefront, brick and mortar location, or you're doing something on the side. Let's say you're doing ads on Craigslist or you're meeting people at Starbucks and so forth. And this is one of the questions that I ask people at the beginning of any training session that I do. So 4 days out of the week, we basically have a 4-day training program where we bring people in and we teach them about not only repairing phones, but how to run a cell phone repair business. And I always lead off by finding out what it is that people are going to be doing as far as their business plan goes. You know, are they opening a brick and mortar location? Do they already have a store where they're adding phone repair to the services that they offer? Or is it something they're doing part-time on the side? Or maybe they're doing on-site repairs where they drive out and meet a customer somewhere or go to their home or place of business or whatever it is. And I don't have anything against whatever business plan that people come up with. You know, you get kind of a bit of competition, I think, between those two types of businesses. You have people who are in the storefront location and people who are doing things by appointment where they meet people and they don't really have a storefront. And, you know, in some situations, you'll hear the people with the brick and mortar store saying, oh, well, this is one of those Craigslist guys that meet you at Starbucks. Well, some of these people that I have trained are doing exactly that, and they are very reputable when it comes to the repairs. They do business the right way. They're absolutely trying to help their customers the best they can. They've been trained. They are professionals, and they've chosen to do things on site instead of doing it at a brick and mortar location. I guess I should also include mail-in repairs, although that's not really the focus of our training. Mail-in repairs are at this point in time at least reserved for very specialized types of repairs, because for the most part, if you can go down the street, you're not going to mail your phone, you know, three states away or really any amount of distance because of the turnaround time. So I'm not going to address those types of businesses at this point. But for the two different ones where there's an on-site and there's a brick and mortar location, there are some differences when it comes to the cost of doing business. And this is always a factor in determining prices and how to approach pricing, negotiating, and being competitive. So again, I'll start by finding out what people are planning to do and then have them take a look at how they're going to compete in this marketplace. And one of the big factors, of course, is going to be price, because unfortunately, when a customer sees a dollar sign, they don't really need to, in their opinion, look very far beyond what that amount is. So we get this a lot. We'll have people call in and say, hey, how much do you charge for this? And what you'll typically experience is if you give them an immediate response, one of two things will happen. Generally, they'll say, oh, well, I talked to this other place who can do it for less. And in that situation, they're going to put you in a spot where you have to justify why your price is higher, or you've got to come down and match or beat the competitor's price, which is something that I would discourage people from doing, because, you know, the next thing they're going to do is hang up the phone and call someone else and say, oh, well, the person I just talked to told me this price, so what's yours? And they'll go down the list until they find the person with the lowest price. And this is what separates, in my opinion, the more successful businesses from those that come and go and those that don't succeed for a number of reasons. One of the main ones being profitability. When someone sees a video on YouTube and says, oh, fixing an iPhone 6 screen is easy. All you need is a couple screwdrivers, you get the new part, you take some screws apart, you reassemble it, put it back together, and you're done. So therefore, if I can complete that repair in 20 minutes, then if I charge someone, oh, $15 for the labor. So you're gonna obviously charge a customer for the part, but you're gonna charge them $15 in labor, because if you can do three phones in an hour, now we're talking $45 an hour, which is not a bad rate, right? No matter what you're doing, if you're meeting people at Starbucks or if you're running a brick and mortar location, a $45 per hour labor revenue is not really a bad thing to start off with. Now, obviously, that is not how the real world works. And this is why we see a lot of people come and go for a couple of reasons. The main one is this is probably a close call. One of the main ones will be not understanding what it costs to run a business. So to say $15 profit for 20 minutes worth of work is a good thing sounds great on the surface until you start looking a little further than that. And the considerations that I like to point people to, first of all, is if you're doing things on location, obviously the time that you spend in the car is on the clock and you're not getting paid for that. So if it takes you 15 minutes to get to the customer, 15 minutes to do the repair, and 15 minutes to get to the next customer, now you're not making $45 an hour and you're not even making $15 an hour, because we have to include in the cost of doing business the amount of money that you spend on gas, the wear and tear on your vehicle, any incidental expenses that come up during the day. Obviously, you have to eat lunch at some point. You've got to make sure that you're doing some sort of marketing to reach your customers. In any case, you understand that the translation is not going to be equal across the board. The cost of doing business, often the unforeseen costs of doing business, are what cause a lot of people to think, wow, this sounds like a really good thing to get into. And then they realize later on, not so great. What if you have a defective part that you've installed and it takes you, let's say it takes you 15 minutes to install the part, but then you find out that it doesn't work properly when it's installed. Now, we try to test parts before we put them into the device, but sometimes that doesn't give us the whole story. We've got to actually get everything installed, and then we find out something else is wrong. Or we find out that the customer has a different problem with their phone than just a broken screen. What if you show up and you go and take off the customer's old screen? And this applies to any business. Doesn't matter if you're doing on location or brick and mortar. If you install the part or you connect the part to the customer's phone and you find out that the problem is not the display, the problem is actually something else inside the phone and possibly something that you can't repair. You might even open the phone and find water damage, or you might find physical damage from a prior repair. What I'm getting at is you might come to the conclusion that you cannot fix the customer's phone. Now, you spent an hour of your time for nothing. So that's basically a write-off, which is, you know, taking this $15 per hour that didn't even sound good to start with, and now you can divide that, you know, to a fraction depending on how many problems you run into during that business day. And you're going to run into your share for sure. Now, this is going to also happen at a brick and mortar location, which is why it's on one hand nice to be able to have customers come to you. You don't have to go chase them down and find them and hope that they're, you know, they have the payment. And another thing about doing repairs on location is that sometimes you run into people who agree on a price, agree with you with the price over the phone. And when you get there, they say, well, I've only got this much money. And sadly, this is something that I saw happening so often on Craigslist that we decided several years ago that Craigslist was not the place that we wanted to use in order to find customers to bring into our business. If you look at something like Craigslist, and I don't want to pick on Craigslist, this would be true of any online classified site where people are able to sell things between private parties. And in some cases, you could include eBay and a number of other third parties who facilitate sales online. They are targeting customers who are looking for the best deal they can get, which means translates to they want to spend as little, the smallest amount of money as possible. So with that in mind, you've got to really start to look at who is going to support your business. Who do you want to deal with, and who do you want sending their friends? Because you will get referrals. What type of crowd are you going after? And I see a lot of people get discouraged because they see ads on Craigslist and Facebook, and they think, oh, well, this guy's doing this for so much less than me. How can I possibly compete? And you have to remind yourself that in many cases, you may not be competing with that person who's advertising for a service that looks very similar to yours. And I'm not saying that you're not. There are obviously going to be some people out there who want to be in that category of, we have the lowest price. And obviously that will come with the cost. So as I mentioned earlier, there are a couple of reasons why someone might be able to offer what appears to be the same type of service for a significantly lower dollar amount. And beyond the fact that someone working by appointment might be able to charge less because they have a slightly lower overhead, not having to pay a lease or electricity or employees' hourly rates and so forth in a brick and mortar location. The other way that people seem to be decreasing the price significantly is by using crappy parts. So there is going to be a certain number of people who are looking for a repair that allows them to trade their phone in with their phone carrier. And I talked about this a bit on a YouTube video that I did a couple weeks ago. So you will have some customers who legitimately just want to spend the smallest amount of money as possible, and they really don't care about the quality. So if you have a customer who says, look, let me pause here for just a second. Because one thing that I meant to mention earlier is that if you are one of the people who answers your phone, whether it's your mobile or your business or wherever you're at, and says, hi, this is whatever business, and the customer says, hey, how much do you charge to replace an iPhone 6S screen? And you just give them a dollar amount and that's it. If that's all you have, if that's all you're able to offer the customer is your current price, and then they'll say, well, you know, I heard these guys do it for this amount, or can you do better than that, or what about a discount? And if your next response is, well, we can do it for this much less, or if you come in today, we'll do this type of deal, you know, realize that you're putting yourself in the category of quite a few people out there who have very little to offer other than the ability to perform a repair. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, isn't that what the customer is after? Well, yes and no. So, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of customers will look at the cost of a repair, and that's all they see is the dollar amount. There is, as you know, if you're in this business, and you may very well know if you've had your phone repaired by the wrong person, there is a huge difference in the type of workmanship that goes into a quality repair versus one where someone who with very little experience or really not, you know, caring about what they're doing does to your phone. And this is, again, something that is limited to a small group of people who want to sell their phone or return it to the carrier for some sort of rebate versus people who intend on continuing to use their device. So if I buy the cheapest garbage knockoff screen I can get for an iPhone, and therefore I'm able to offer a lower repair price than my competitor, that may get me a lot of business in the beginning, but how many headaches am I going to create by performing crappy work and probably not giving a guarantee? Because how good of a warranty can you give on a part that you know is going to fail in 30 or 60 days? That's probably the limitation right there, right? Or maybe it's once you get to the door, you're no longer under warranty. And this is an easy way not only to earn a bad reputation for yourself, but for the repair industry in general. And this is one of the things that, you know, it's kind of a hot topic with people who do phone repairs and want to maintain a standard of quality throughout the industry, which at this point in time is very difficult to do. And it's very easy to complain about, but unfortunately, people are going to run their businesses the way that they want to. So I know I'm rambling again. I'm kind of getting sidetracked, but I do that occasionally. There's just so much information that goes into this. So let me go back to my notes because I want to make sure that I'm not missing anything. So obviously, we have the cost of doing business, and we have only a couple of ways of reducing our retail prices. And one is either to accept a smaller profit. The other is to cheap out on the parts or cheap out on the quality or not really take the time to perform a quality repair. And what I was getting at here is that I can tell you, at least in my experience and in the experience of the majority of the people who I've trained, who I've spoken to, who have come back and talked about what made their business work, what made them successful, and beyond marketing and getting the customer in initially, which I will do in a separate episode, the answer is doing quality work, gaining the trust and confidence of your customer, and getting them and phone carriers to refer business to you because they know you do a great job. Now, obviously, I want to step back here a second. If you're in the on-site repair business, this is going to be slightly different for you. But do understand that there are customers who want you to come to them. And those are always going to be people whose business you can compete for using the same guidelines and the same principles as far as doing quality work and using quality parts and backing up what you do. But you may be more likely to see people who are looking for something of lower or who are willing to accept something of lower quality in order to pay a lower price. And you've got to decide whether you want to be able to service that customer and in the long term, what it's going to do for your business. So I caution people because even if in the short term, it sounds like a great deal to use a really low quality part and sell to someone who really doesn't care about the quality of that repair, there are going to be a few out there who say, you know what, you know, they understand what they asked for and they got what they asked for, but they're still going to blame you when the screen stops working in a few weeks, or when they have problems with the phone, or when the glue fails on the lens and it starts to come off the phone. So really consider whether or not you're in this business for the long haul, or do you just want to make a few bucks over the next couple of months until you get such a bad reputation that you really can't stay in business anymore. I've seen it happen over and over again. So we see a lot of people entering this business and then leaving over time because of the quality of their work. And, you know, my question is, if you want to get into something just to make a very small amount of money and not worry about the quality of the work that you're doing, why would you choose phone repair? I mean, open a hot dog stand, do something that's much easy, you know, much less difficult or much, what's the word I'm looking for here? That is harder to screw up. Do something that's easier to do to make a small amount of money. Why would you want to do something that can ruin a person's handheld electronic device for a very small amount of money? There are much easier things to do and make very little money. Now, if you're in a brick and mortar location, this becomes 10 times more important in my opinion because you've got a place that people can go to immediately once they experience, if and when they experience a problem with the repair that you perform. So A, you can compete or you are competing for a completely different customer. So when you see someone saying, oh, this is super cheap on Facebook and Craigslist and wherever else it is, and you're talking about someone who does on-site repairs, you've got to keep in mind that customers who go to brick and mortar locations for phone repairs in many cases are not comfortable with meeting someone or having someone come to them. They want to have a storefront that they can walk into and feel confident that when they leave, that if they have any questions or problems, they can come back to you. So please, as discouraging as it can be to see someone offering a price that's way lower than yours, understand that unless they're in a real brick and mortar location, and I'm not talking about a temporary trade show setup or a cart in a mall that's on a month-to-month lease. I'm talking about someone who has a real phone repair store that is your direct competitor. These are the people that we want to be aware of and know what, you know, I always say keep your eyes open to everything, but this is where you really want to be concerned about how they're doing business. And again, backing up, I know I'm kind of all over the place here this morning, but I have so much stuff I want to talk about and I'm trying to keep it under 30 minutes. I think I've already gone over. But if someone calls your store and says, how much is this repair? And all you do is give them a dollar amount, you're setting yourself up to fail. Let me say that right now. This is a very important point. There is so much more to the phone repairer business these days, especially, than there was 10 years ago. At one point in time, we were the only game in town. So if someone called us and said, how much is this repair? We were only competing with the carrier who said, well, you can pay for another phone full retail price, or you can re-sign your contract and get the promotional price or the free phone or whatever it was at the time, which thankfully they don't do anymore. But beyond that, it was come to us and here's what the cost is and weigh that against what the carrier is telling you. Nowadays, you have your cost versus whatever the price is going to be down the street at the other, XYZ store. What's the difference between us and them or between you and them? If you're using the same type of parts, which for the most part, you're going to be using something of comparable quality, because this other store, if they want to stay in business, they're not going to be selling cheap, crappy stuff that falls apart, hopefully. If they are, they can't afford to price themselves much lower than what you are and stay in business realistically. I mean, that's the bottom line. So what gets the customer, and even if they are a few dollars less than you, what gets the customer into your store versus theirs? And the answer may be that maybe you were the last place that they called. This happens quite often in any type of sales. If you're at, if the customer makes it to you, if they call three other places, and let's say one place doesn't answer the phone, the second place just gives them a price and they say, okay, I'm going to call somewhere else and compare prices. And the third place doesn't, treats them rudely on the phone and they go, I don't like the vibe here. Or, there's a language barrier. Sometimes you have a Spanish speaking customer call in a business where no one speaks Spanish. And sometimes you have someone who speaks English who calls a business that doesn't have the same English skills that another place would. So there can always be a language barrier as well. But beyond those things, beyond minor things like that, let's say the customer gets to you on the fourth call and they already have a price in mind from one of the stores they called, and the other two they've pretty much written off. You may be fortunate in that case in that they say, hey, how much do you guys do this for? And your price happens to be in line with or lower than the other place that they called. And they go, okay, that sounds great. I called for places. I'm ready to come in. And they come to you. But generally, that's not going to be the case. In many situations, what it's going to come down to is how they're treated on the phone and how much of a connection you're able to establish in that short period of time. And you don't have a lot of time. The customer calls up and says, hey, what do you guys charge for this phone repair? The first thing you should be asking yourself is whether or not you want to treat your business like a commodity. Are you going to say, well, here's our cost and like it or not, take it or leave it, this is what we have. We're going to get our prices down as low as we can and that's it. Or are you going to be able to sell your business and the quality of the work that you're doing and your reputation and the personal, interpersonal skills that you or the person answering the phone has with the customer when they call the business? This is a big one. This is part of closing the deal. So at this point, phone repair in many markets has become so competitive that it goes far beyond the technical side of the solution for the customer and into more of a sales mentality where you need to make a sale. The customer is calling you. By calling you, they're saying, why should I do business with you? And you've got to give them a legitimate reason to come to you in a very short period of time. So when someone calls in and says, how much do you guys charge for this repair? If you dig a little deeper, this is my short answer here is to A, get more information from the customer, B, establish some sort of connection to communicate to them that you care about them, their phone, and the repair that you're going to be doing on the phone. And three is going to be asking for the sale. Okay, so this is my simplified method, and there's obviously much more to it, but these are the things that we want to talk about with the customer when they call. Here's an example. So someone calls in and says, hey, how much do you charge for this screen repair? And generally, I would probably do point number two first. So I'm going to switch things up. First of all, we want to create some sort of connection. We want to demonstrate to the customer that we're real people who care about their problem. Hey, I broke my phone. What do you guys charge for the screen? Oh, man, that sucks. iPhone 6S, and that's a pretty new one. So what happened exactly? Did you drop it? Did somebody throw it across the room? I mean, probably wouldn't ask that right up front, but get the story from the customer. How did this damage occur? Number one. There's an example. So you want to show some empathy. Oh, that sucks. You know, the iPhone 7 just came out and it broke. That's a bummer. And well, oh, you didn't have AppleCare, obviously. So here, before we look at the price, I need to get some more information. So this was, I mentioned it first, I know, but this is going to be the second point. Let's find out about what happened. You know, I've been repairing phones for X amount of time, and generally what we like to look for before we quote the price is the extent of the damage. You know, was it just the glass on the front? Is the LCD also broken? If we take a good look at the housing, we have to... So there are a number, there are bits of information that I want to get from a customer that you should already know. Do you want to know what the screen looks like? Is the housing bent? You know, any number of things. Is anything else not functioning? Have you checked the front and rear cameras? Does this touchscreen respond in any place just in here? You know, are any of the buttons affected and so forth? And the more information that you get from the customer, to an extent, remember there's a limit here. We have a very short period of time, but you want to get the essential information from the customer that demonstrates to them that you know what you're doing. If all you do is spit out a price, there is no connection, there's no concern, and you're also not making an attempt at closing the deal, which is my last point. After we have this conversation with the customer and we say, oh, you know what? Hey, I'm really sorry to hear that happened. Tell me a little bit more about it. I want to make sure that I can quote you an accurate price. By the way, we really like to see the frame when it comes in just to determine, you know, on some of these phones, they didn't really reinforce the frame. And if we have to make any adjustments to it, we want to make sure we get a good look at it beforehand and so forth. We always check it for water damage. Here are some of the other services that we do. But again, remember to keep this as short as possible. I'm just giving examples. You don't want to draw this conversation out any longer than the customer is comfortable with. So obviously there are some people who like to talk. So if they like to talk, that's fine to an extent, but at some point it will also cut into your time. So we want to keep it under a couple, you know, a few minutes at the most. Also, at the end, remember to ask for the customer's business. So before you get off the phone, let them know if you have to. Hey, you know what? I just checked. We actually have that screen in stock right now. We've got black or white. Doesn't matter which one you need. Oh, by the way, what color is your phone? We want to make sure we're getting you the right color on the phone. Maybe you've asked another question like, is your Touch ID working? Because we see sometimes this is affected by broken screens and so forth. And obviously what the customer really wants to hear is what is the price. But we are, during this time, building some value. We're demonstrating that we care and we understand, we care about and we understand they're a problem. And at the very end, we want to get them to make a commitment to come to us, because if we haven't, then we've obviously invested our time for nothing. So, hey, I tell you what, I can do the repair for $99. It's going to take about 20 to 30 minutes. What time's good for you? I'll make sure that I have someone available. Or, hey, do you think you can make it in before 4 o'clock? Because that's typically when we start getting busy because people are getting off work. You know, ask for that sale. Don't be afraid to say, hey, what time can we expect you? And if they say yes, or I'll be there at whatever time, or they, you know, they kind of don't want to give you an answer, whatever, that's fine. That's not a problem. Even if they say they'll be there and they don't show up, what have you lost? Absolutely nothing. But if you ask the customer to come in and see you, there's a good possibility that they will remember and they'll understand that, hey, we've kind of made a deal and this is what's going to happen. And for me calling you and picking your brain and you giving me answers, it's not a lot for you to ask for my commitment to come in and get that repair done. So remember, last but not least, make sure to close the deal. All right, I know I was kind of all over the place there today, but hopefully you gained something that will be helpful out of this podcast. I do thank you for listening. As always, I'll be back on Friday to recap what happened in the world of wireless. Remember, you can always get a hold of me on Twitter at FixMyCellPhone. Look me up on YouTube or Facebook. Just search for Go Cell Phone Repair. Or you can email me directly. That is Mike@GoCellPhoneRepair.com. Have a great week.